Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my podcast. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2024. The month of February, I've been focusing in on the 45th anniversary of Iran becoming the Islamic Republic of Iran when Khomeini and his hoods returned from exile after the exile of the Shah, promising freedom, all of this wonderful change and reform, and instead brought death and destruction. It was the day that Iran lost their soul, and the Iranian people, instead of being loyal to the Shah and all of the wonderful things that happened during his occupation. And there were, of course, some problems and things he did that probably weren't good. But for the most part, they instead entrusted their lives to a man who turned Iran into one big prison. I've been focusing in on what happened, the consequences of the revolution, had some interviews with people who lived at that time, and what they described, the terror that ensued. And on February 11th, 45 years ago, Iran became officially the Islamic Republic of Iran, a theocratic Islamic state. Today on the Cross in the Desert, I want to focus in on two individuals that were there that have testified to what happened during the revolution. And I want to focus in on their eyewitness testimony of how it changed their life and how it forever made such an impact on their life. And as they watched their Iranian friends being imprisoned and tortured, how it affected them. And this morning I'm reading from my book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran, which you can get right up on Amazon. In fact, it is now available in an audiobook, which is a wonderful addition besides the Kindle and the paperback, that it can bring you right into the stories of my Iranian friends. It takes the book to a whole different level, and so it's available up on Amazon. This morning I want to focus in on a friend. Her name is Shabnam Asadali. She was an eyewitness to the revolution. And since then, she has, of course, migrated out of Iran, and she is a very strong advocate for human rights in Canada. She also helps lots of refugees resettle, and especially Iranians from all over the world. She's very helpful in getting them into a safe haven from other countries. And Shabnam has quite a story. And she is what I call a survivor of the revolution. And so without further ado, I want you to hear a credible woman's story. I did not think that a simple conversation, having an opinion, and simply expressing it would put my life in danger. I was just 13 when Khomeini came into power. And this is how Shabnam Asadali begins her story, as a young teenager living in Tehran when suddenly her whole world was turned upside down. February 1st, 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini arrived in Tehran flying in from Paris on a jumbo 747, greeted by millions of protesters who had successfully caused the Shah to go into exile. A new Islamic state had just been birthed. For millions of Iranians, their lives would never be the same again. Khomeini's Revolutionary Guards and morality police would now be in full control of their lives. Shabnam writes, quote, "Overnight, all women, including elementary girls, were forced to cover their bodies from head to toe and were ordered to wear only dark colors. We were no longer allowed to attend school with the opposite sex. Our once-praised school curriculum was now replaced by Arabic, Islamic studies, and the Quran." It was mandatory now. Freedom of speech became a thing of the past. If you disagreed with the new regime, you risked being arrested and never seeing your parents again. Yet Shabnam could not keep her views to herself. She experienced an awakening and felt compelled to speak her mind about the so-called new rules and values being imposed on her and all of her classmates. Eventually, the new regime arrived on her doorstep in order to silence her. And at the age of 16, just 3 years after Khomeini's reign, the Revolutionary Guard arrested Shabnam and took her away to the notorious hellhole known as Evin Prison. Shabnam's teenage years had been rudely interrupted and transformed into a nightmare. She was now a prisoner of Khomeini and Evin Prison, where the new regime was executing young teenagers on a daily basis in front of a firing squad. Yet, ironically, Shabnam's interrogator took pity on her and spared her from the torture chamber. Instead, she was left outside every day, blindfolded, cold and hungry. Even though she had been physically spared from the grueling torture, Shabnam recalls the agony of listening to the desperate cries of prisoners begging and screaming for their deaths rather than suffering for another minute. "At night," Shabnam says, "I counted around 60 to 70 bullets, which meant 60, 70 souls had been executed, and I was hearing the last shot they would give the victim in the head." Finally, after spending 18 horrifying months in Evin Prison, Shabnam was released. She was determined to find out why she had been in prison and why so many of her friends had been senselessly murdered. She discovered that this new regime demanded absolute compliance or else death. If teenagers were caught with books or leaflets on their possession that disagreed with the new government, they would be arrested and then executed. Democracy and freedom of speech under the Shah had been replaced by an intolerant regime that ushered in a dictatorship. Women were now considered second-class citizens with a new dress code. The wearing of hijabs was now the new law that once had been banned under the Pahlavi dynasty. The sexes were segregated, and young girls, some at the tender age of 9 years, were now forced into marriages. A couple of other rules: they were no longer allowed to ride bicycles in public. They were no longer allowed to attend soccer games in the stadium. Everything is segregated. Women became second class. Even before the new regime, Shabnam had hated God. In her mind, there was no God. He didn't exist. Shabnam recalls that shortly before the execution, while in Turkey, her and her family was visited by Christian missionaries. Although she was resistant to the message of God's love, here's what Shabnam says. She remembered watching a film they brought about the life of Jesus. During the movie, Shabnam watched Jesus dying on the cross, and deep down inside, she was touched by his act of sacrificial love. Yet, she continued to resist. Then Shabnam began having dreams about a man on a white horse. She mentioned this to her friend, and her friend replied that God was reaching out to her and calling her. Her friend began to diligently pray and fast for her, and after many dreams, questioning and searching, Shabnam finally surrendered her heart to Christ. The young, rebellious, outspoken teenage girl had found her ultimate purpose in life. Now she knew why her life had been spared from the torture and rape in Evan prison. Well, today Shabnam is married. She lives in Canada with her husband. She has gone from a rebellious teenager to a powerful advocate for human rights. For many years, she produced children's programs with Trans World Radio Canada, and now today, she helps newcomers and refugees, particularly women, resettle in Canada. Now, of course, this is the passion of her life because she witnessed firsthand what life was like under the new revolution. Shabnam has been recognized by the Canadian Parliament as a courageous and outstanding promoter of human rights. She has not forgotten her horrifying experience in Evan prison. She continues to speak out and be a voice for Iranians today who are suffering under an oppressive government. Not much has changed in Iran, but Shabnam has changed. She has dedicated her life to speaking out against the gross and unjust violations of human rights in Iran. Shabnam is a true survivor of the revolution, and 45 years later is still fighting passionately for human rights. What a remarkable lady, a survivor of the revolution. I want to turn our attention now to someone else that is a survivor. She is a best-selling author of the book Prisoner of Tehran, and just recently, After Tehran, a follow-up book. Her name is Marina Namat, and you're going to listen to this soundbite, and you're going to hear her explain to you what she witnessed firsthand. Let's listen.
Yesterday, Bahman, is the day when the Islamic Revolution succeeded. It was the day when Iran completely changed, at least the Iran I knew. For many people, it was the beginning of a huge devastation. The people of Iran thought that they knew what they wanted. And of course, maybe they did know what they wanted, but it wasn't delivered to them. So they were basically betrayed significantly by the leaders of the revolution. At the beginning, when Khomeini came around, he said he wanted to bring justice and democracy to Iran, but that is not what happened. So I had grown up watching Little House on the Prairie every Thursday night, reading Jane Austen and Ernest Hemingway and Charles Dickens and C.S. Lewis, and dancing to the tunes of the Bee Gees on the beach wearing a little tiny bikini, and doing all the things that Western kids used to do. And then suddenly the Islamic Revolution happened, and all of these things, all of them, everything that was my life became illegal. So naturally, you know, when you're a teenager, you rebel against the color of the wall. So, but we had a good reason to rebel because we had grown up wearing what we wanted, the mini skirts and bikinis. And then suddenly we were not allowed to wear colors, like pink was basically illegal, and we had to cover up. What I did was that I spoke against the new rules and regulations in my school. I spoke against having our lessons replaced by government propaganda. And as a result, my principal gave my name, along with many other names, at least 40 or 50 of them, to the course of Islamic justice. And he branded us as anti-revolutionaries, a danger to national security. And we were arrested one by one, usually at home in the middle of the night, and we were taken to Evin prison.
5, 6, 7, 8,
Evin prison is a political prison located in north of Iran. It was built during the time of the Shah.
99% of people who entered Evin prison, regardless of their age or gender, they were tortured severely. So if you had not cooperated under torture and during your interrogation, you would receive either a death sentence or life in prison. None of my friends, we are talking 16-year-olds here, had a sentence under 10 years in prison. I received a death sentence. It was eventually reduced to life in prison. And then it was eventually reduced to 3 years in prison. and then I was pardoned. Thousands of prisoners were executed in those years. Every single night, we listened to gunshots, and we knew that these are our friends who are dying not far from where we were kept.
If you want to compare the Shah's regime to the Islamic regime, you basically magnify every atrocity that Shah committed and magnify it by 1,000%, and then you will get the Islamic Republic. I think these young people on the streets of Tehran, they have immense courage because they know what they are facing. They know that if they are arrested, they will be tortured and probably killed. So I have immense respect for them. You know, even 30 years of killing and torturing cannot stop a people from looking for democracy.
5, 6, 7, 8, 5, 6, 7, 8, 5, 6, 7, 8. The powerful testimony from Marina Namat, author of the book, bestseller, Prisoner of Tehran, a survivor of the revolution, giving us a firsthand account of her capture, her experience, and what she witnessed when the Iranian regime, the Pahlavi dynasty, was overthrown by Khomeini and everything changed forever. There were many circumstances that led up to the revolution. It was the complaint of the Muslim clergy that Iran had become too westernized, that they had changed their soul. Everything was secular instead of religious now, and many events led up to the overthrow of the Shah. But the main complaint was Iran was too involved in Western values, was too buddy-buddy with the people of the United States or the government of the United States. And so there you heard it from Shabnam and from Marina this morning, two eyewitness survivors of the revolution. Since, of course, of the Iranian revolution, there has been uprisings and there has been battles for freedom, but nothing like there was in September of 2022 when Mahsa Amini was brutally killed while in custody for wearing an improper hijab. There has been a real revolutionary response, an uprising that looks like, if it continues to mobilize, will be the final death nail to this Islamic regime. I want us to hear in conclusion today a very special report. It's from ABC Australia on the gender apartheid in Iran and what is going on. And I think this puts everything in perspective that the Iranians have learned their lesson. They're tired of being oppressed and betrayed, that they're rising up to conquer this government. And let's listen to this special report.
Women in Iran are now facing up to 10 years in prison for dressing inappropriately. These laws have been labelled a form of gender apartheid by United Nations experts and described as a despicable assault on the rights of women by Amnesty International. The introduction of these laws comes just days after the anniversary of the death of Mahsa Jina Amini, a 22-year-old Kurdish woman who was arrested for improperly wearing a hijab and died in custody. Her death is what sparked the massive protests in Iran that quickly spread around the world. In Iranian law, after puberty, women are forced to cover their hair with a hijab when in public and to wear long and loose-fitting clothing to hide their figure. Right now, failure to follow those rules can result in a fine or a prison sentence of between 10 days and 2 months. Under these new laws, being inappropriately dressed in public will now be subject to a fourth degree punishment, which basically can mean between a 5 and 10 year prison sentence.
That's something that's on par with the crime of murder in the Islamic Republic.
The bill also includes heavy punishments for promoting any organized acts of defiance of the dress code, or even something as simple as making fun of the hijab online. The regime in Iran has tried to justify all of this by saying that the most severe punishments will be for acts considered to be linked to hostile foreign forces. That may sound serious, but what this actually means is an important part of understanding how the regime is trying to frame all of this. The regime in Iran basically blames the entire movement on foreign forces and has repeatedly said that it's a plot orchestrated by Israel and the United States without providing any evidence.
since the regime came to power in 1979, it's often used foreign powers as a scapegoat because it's tried to diminish the genuine sentiment of the people.
It does this despite the fact that the protests were started in Iran by Iranian women and are being led and driven outside of Iran by the Iranian diaspora.
It is so important for us to be here.
We will never give in, we will never give up, we will never back down, and we will never, ever surrender.
Over the past year, authorities have been systematically and often violently suppressing any protests and opposing voices, as well as targeting the families of protesters and ramping up public surveillance and policing.
These are deliberate tactics of the regime to scare people into submission.
According to UN experts, since the protests began, tens of thousands of protesters have been arrested and more than 520 people have been killed, including at least 71 children. All of this has pushed a lot of the resistance inside of Iran underground, something that's been covered in a recent report by the ABC. While large protests do still regularly occur, many have turned to other forms of defiance, like public graffiti, striking, or simply ignoring dress code laws in public, which may partly explain why the regime is now bringing in harsher punishments. If you're wondering how these harsher punishments pass through the parliament so easily, it's important to remember that the parliament in Iran isn't a true representation of the people. And that's because anyone that genuinely opposes the regime isn't allowed to run for office in the first place. And according to a recent independent survey of more than 150,000 people inside of Iran, more than 80% want to see the regime gone. Just a quick little disclaimer. Although the bill has passed through parliament, it still needs the approval of the Guardian Council before it comes into effect. But considering the Guardian Council, which was set up to protect the regime and is made up of conservative religious clerics and law experts that are either directly or indirectly handpicked by the Supreme Leader, it's unlikely that these new laws are going to face much opposition. The bottom line here is that even though protesters inside of Iran have had to change the way they operate as the government continues to crack down on dissent, it doesn't mean that support for the cause is over. And Iranians around the world have continued to loudly protest, push for change, and advocate for those who feel as if they can't speak up.
For people inside Iran, there is no looking back, there is no turning back.
The regime can annihilate and murder individuals, but it can't annihilate or put an end to the sentiment. There's a fire inside the hearts and minds of Iranians that it can't extinguish. That flame is going to keep on burning.
There is the human spirit that refuses to stand by and be oppressed. It was in the movie Braveheart, that famous scene where you saw Mel Gibson, you know, as William Wallace, he's lying there being tortured. And he's being asked, if you will just give in and support this government, we're going to lessen your punishment. You're going to go free. And as his head was about to be chopped off, he refused to give in to their demands, and he yelled, freedom. It's a famous scene. It's a bone-chilling scene in the movie. The Iranian people, the young people especially, know all about what happened when their parents and family endured this oppression 45 years ago, and they refused to say anything to please this government, but the one word that keeps coming in their soul, just like Mel Gibson, William Wallace, is the word freedom. They're shouting it from the rooftops. When the Woman, Life, and Freedom movement began back in September of 2022, a famous Persian singer, Shervin Hajipour, created and wrote a song about the uprising, which became an anthem. He had millions of hits on his Instagram account liking the song. He was eventually put in jail for writing this great anthem. Now, of course, for us that live in the West, we don't understand Farsi, so it was translated. And it was actually produced as a song by a lady named Rana Mansour, and she has the English version of this anthem for the uprising that was written by Shervin Hajipour. I want us to hear the beautiful words that sum up the heart and soul of the Iranians who want freedom. It's a song called Barari, And this is the English version. This is the anthem of the Woman, Life, and Freedom Uprising. Let's listen.
For dancing in the alleys and the streets, for the thrill and the fear of getting caught kissing, for my sister, my brother in unity, for all the times we tried to change their minds and stale beliefs, for the loss of pride, for poverty, for the dream of just a normal life for you and me, for all the children who are starving for a loaf of bread, for the greed of politics and all the lies they spread, for all the mass polluted air we breathe, for all the litter in the streets and all the dying trees, for all the animals who suffer from elimination, for all the cats and dogs who love us without no conditions, for all the tears that seem to never end, for all the images that keep on turning in our heads, for a simple smile to last a little while, for the future generations fighting for their time, for empty promises of heaven in the afterlife, for all the imprisonments of beautiful minds, for all the babies who were born and for the ones who died, for all the times you told the truth and all the times you lied, for all the speeches that we heard about a million times, for all the shacks and shelters that were sold to make a dime, for just a glimpse of a peaceful life, for the rising of the sun after an endless night, for all the pills we pop just to get some sleep, for all mankind and our country, for all the boys and girls who never knew equality, for woman, for life, liberty.
Beautiful English version of a Farsi composition. In fact, Shervin Hajipour's anthem for the uprising won a Grammy Award last year for Best Song in the Social Change category. And through this song, Shervin has put a face on the plight of all Iranians with his anthem song. As I conclude today, I go back to Scripture. And for my book, Uprising, I talk about this and absolutely remind us that God is in control of all world events, that he hears the cries of the oppressed, and he will answer their cries because their lives are precious to him. And as we conclude today, remember Masa. You courageously defied the hijab law. Your unjust death sparked a revolution, an uprising that we will never, never die from that uprising. We are all Masa. They will not force us. They will stop degrading us. They will not control us, and we will be victorious. God bless you so much for listening, and thank you for being a participant on The Cross in the Desert. I will see all of you again on Monday for another program. Have yourself a great weekend.